Good morning, this is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for David Inge. Glad you could listen today. During this hour of the show, we'll be talking about children's books and some ideas for summer reading. And we have two guests who spend a lot of time with books and paying attention to what's new in children's books. We have, as our guests, Janice Harrington, Head of Youth Services at the Champaign Public Library, and Deborah Stevenson, Associate Editor of the Bulletin of the Center for Children's Books, which is at the University of Illinois. And they both, as I say, pay a great deal of attention, and we'll talk about what's new in kids' books, and also welcome your calls. If you have questions or recommendations, any thoughts on the subject, those are welcome. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us, around Illinois, Indiana, parts of the other states our signal travels to, 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-WILL. Well, to both of you, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Mm-hmm.
It's always fun to talk about this.
Yes.
It's one of those subjects that, you know, it's not stressful at all.
No, absolutely not.
So let me just, maybe throw it to Janice Harrington and, you know, ask you what are you seeing in terms of kids' interest in books these days? Anything really great?
Actually, let me back up just a little bit.
Sure.
And just say that for all the families and children who are going on their summer vacations this summer, I'd like to suggest that they make the Champaign Public Library their first stop. And while you're there, make sure you get the library card. The fall school season will be starting. And just like we think of pencils and paper and new clothes, a library card is a critical educational tool. That's how you get the library's resources. And I can't say that enough. Get a library card for your child. Next, though, you have to come in for summer reading. We have a great one this summer. Mm-hmm. It's called Feed Your Need to Read. You come in, you get a card that looks something like a bingo card. There are 16 different activities. You choose 4 on that card and you complete them. Any activities that you choose to do, though, you end up having to read at least 2 books. For the program, there's 6 different cards. Each card has a different prize. The third card, you get a free paperback book, and those are given to us by the Friends of the Champaign Public Library. Kids are so excited about this because not only do they get to read, but it's an interactive program. It's a chance for them to meet the professionals who are going to be helping them during the school year. And so they get to do things like tell us their favorite knock-knock joke or tell us about their scar on their body. And I know that you've been dying to know about what the top knock-knock joke this summer is, Jack. So
I
do want to
share.
You,
I was going to ask.
You know how it goes, don't you? Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Who's there?
Shelby.
Shelby who?
Shelby coming around the mountain when she comes. I just report them. I don't make them up.
Okay.
But the card is filled with all sorts of activities that get your kids to talk, to have fun, to enjoy books, and to learn from other people who enjoy books. So sign up for summer reading. Get that library card. And we're really excited because we've got something new in the children's department. We normally do. This year, it's emergent readers. At the Champaign Public Schools are using emergent or leveled readers to teach children how to read. And we've started a collection of leveled readers. So if you've got a young one who's just learning to read, just that very beginning stage, come in and check out that collection. In addition to that, you want to stop by the library not only for summer reading, but for Just for Kids. That's every Tuesday from 2 to 3. We just finished one on Egypt. Kids came out of everywhere to do activities on ancient Egypt, to wrap each other like mummies, to make paper, to do hieroglyphics. They had a great time. In addition to Just for Kids, and again, you can sign up, I should say, for summer reading at all of our library locations, and please do that. So that's the Douglas branch or the bookmobile. And if you'd like to find out what else is going on at the summer, this summer at the library, just pick up our program brochure. You can also go to, in addition to Just for Kids, you can go to TAC at the Douglas branch, and that's Thursdays from 3 to 4. So if you've got a kid who likes to make things, then go to TAC, which is Thursday Arts and Crafts for Kids, if you're wondering what the heck that stands for. You can also find out what the programs we're offering by going to our website, which should be www.champaign.org, or just give us a call, 356-3980. We're more than happy to tell you about the programs, what's going on, and about the new collections. I thought I'd like to share what real kids are coming in to read this summer.
Sure.
And then I know Deborah is going to be talking about the other exciting new works that are coming out.
Yeah, then I'll give you the heads up on what real kids might not have found out about, but might want to read once they do.
Okay, so what are real kids coming in for? Top of the list, the hot seller this summer are the Unfortunate Series of Events books by Lemony Snicket. That is the author's pseudonym. But the kids come in, they want that lemony Snick guy, Snicket. We can't keep them on the shelf. In fact, they haven't been in all summer long.
Wow.
We've ended up ordering additional copies of all the books. So we've got a new shipment coming in. So if you're looking for the series, the library has it. Harry Potter is slipping a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We're not seeing kids come in for Harry Potter so much. It's the adults. We adults every day are coming in for Harry Potter. So if you happen to be over the age of 30 and you have not yet heard the name Harry Potter, do come to the Champaign Public Library. We have all those books. We have up to 35 copies of some of the different
wow.
titles. We also have it on book on tape and book on CD.
Mm-hmm.
Lemony Snicket's at the top. Harry's slipping a little bit. Kids are also coming in for Left Behind. The Left Behind series by Jerry Jenkins. And this is a Christian inspirational literature. And sometimes a book will speak for itself. So this one says, in this exciting series for kids, Jerry B. Jenkins and Tim LaHaye continue the saga of four young friends, Judd, Vicky, Lionel, and Ryan, as the world spins out of control. They spread the truth and fight the forces of evil that threaten their lives. That sort of gets it in a
mm-hmm.
nutshell. So
mm-hmm.
if you are looking for some good Christian fiction for kids, that's the hot seller this summer. Boxcar Children is still the perennial favorite. And so many of our readers or listeners probably remember Boxcar Children. Kids are still coming in for it, and we have all the ones in the series and many, many copies of it. Also hot this summer is Dear America. This is a historical fiction, and it's written as a series of diaries from the perspectives of different girls. So, for example, the one I have here, which is Standing in the Light, is the captive diary of Catherine Carey Logan, and she lived in 1763. The young girls really seem to be interested in historical fiction this summer, and they're coming in for this one, very popular. They love her. They absolutely love. They adore Junie B. Jones. This one is Junie B. Jones Smells Something Fishy. There are lots of Junie B. Jones books. Why do kids like her? I keep asking them, and they keep saying, because she's funny, because she's like a real kid. So Junie B. Jones is very, very hot. Also a favorite, Magic Tree House, the Magic Tree House series. Kids are absolutely in love with it. It's a great series. Sometimes when these things take off, as a librarian, I'm like, oh, God, another one. But I read this one, and I like it myself. Children, they find a big tree. At the top of that tree is a tree house. There are stacks of books. You open up a book, and when you do, you're thrown back into an adventure. The one I read, they got thrown back to the dinosaur days. Mary Kate and Ashley.
Oh, my goodness.
And the Full House books, I'm telling you. Full House Michelle is very, very hot. For some reason, they're not coming in for Full House Stephanie. Go figure. But Mary Kate and Ashley, we can't have enough of these, so we've got them all, many, many copies. So if you've got a fan for that.
My daughter loves Mary Kate and Ashley.
I'm also very pleased that a great classic is making its comeback, and that's probably because the movie, which I think is due about in December,
mm-hmm.
J.R.R. Tolkien, The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Rings, The Two Towers, and The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
Those books are very popular now. Kids and adults are coming in for them, and we have some beautiful editions of those at the library. Thanks to the Champaign Public Schools, we're also seeing a lot of kids coming in for the Rebecca Caudle books, a lot of winners there. And if you want to look for some favorites, because of Winn-Dixie, if you love dog stories, it's a great one. A young girl is just minding her own business. She's in the grocery store. This dog comes in, knocks over one of the displays. The grocery store owner wants to, of course, have it sent to the pound and gotten rid of. But she says, it's my dog. And this is the story of a girl who now has this huge mutt in her life and has to convince her father to let her keep it. Holes. So he's walking down the street. Some tennis shoes fall on his head. And that's how it happened. Well, the judge didn't believe that any more than you did. He thought that this kid was actually trying to steal those tennis shoes that they were going to auction off for the benefit of that center. And so he tells the kids that he has a choice. He can either go to jail or he can go to Camp Green Lake. Well, he'd never been to camp before, being a poor kid. So he chooses Camp Green Lake, and that's where our story starts. Because at Camp Green Lake, the kids have to dig holes. They dig holes as deep as their shovel and as long as their shovel. And they do it day after day after
Whoa.
Day. And this kid begins to wonder why. And that holes, and that's a great book. Shipwreck at the Bottom of the World, Sunwing, a story of a bat. If you like animal stories, a great way to go. And A Kid Told Me That You're a Brave Man, Julius Zimmerman by Mills, is a fantastic book. And Deborah's like cheering over here, so I know that must be true, too. So I will stop there. I probably was going quite quickly, but so those are the hot books this summer, and it's just really a pleasure to see the kids coming into the library, getting their library cards, signing up for summer reading,
yeah.
and leaving with smiles on their faces, and that's the way we like to do it at Champaign.
Yeah, well, the kids just love going to the library. My kids certainly do. And it's just one of the biggest thrills to be surrounded by books.
Yeah, Yeah.
It's just a wonderful thing to see. Mm-hmm. So, good.
Well, I think in summer reading programs, as Janice says, kids really start feeling a part of that library. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go into Champaign and you see kid productions all over that library, kid mm-hmm. lists of what mm-hmm. they're interested mm-hmm. in. And that's one of the reasons why I'm also interested when Janice tells me what the kids are reading. Because on the one hand, there are things that they're drawn to, like Lemony Snicket. On the other hand, the list Janice has just gone through is really extraordinarily wide variety, so that there's bound to be something for just about every kid that comes into Champaign Public mm-hmm. Library. Mm-hmm. It's really astonishing the breadth of what's available for young readers today.
But to be fair, we must say, please sign up for summer reading both at the Champaign Public Library and the Urbana Free Library. We're a fortunate community because mm-hmm. we have two stellar libraries, and you'll be welcome at both places and excited about books in both places.
And they both have fabulous summer reading reading programs going, which I think are a great way to get kids involved in the library and reading, and also a good way to spend parts of your summer. Some of what Janice was talking about makes me think of books that I've liked recently and that have thought that kids are probably going to like a lot. Some of what she was talking about were books like Dear America, Lemony Snicket, where kids get interested in a style, in a writer, in a series and want to keep going. This has actually been a summer for a lot, well, not entirely summer, a year, first half of a year, for sequels and follow-ups and series to a lot of really interesting books. I believe I mentioned when Janice and I were here last winter that I was really enjoying Meg Cabot's The Princess Diaries. Mm. Well, evidently from mm-hmm. my mouth to Hollywood's ears, mm-hmm. That's coming out as a movie soon. If you haven't read it and are getting ready for the movie and you're, somewhere between fifth grade and high school, I think you'll really enjoy it. There is a sequel out now. It is, I think, actually coming out at the end of this month, called Princess in the Spotlight, where Mia, who's already had enough trouble when she found out that her life as a normal Manhattan teenager has been disrupted by the fact that she is the princess of the little-known European country of Genovia. As if this were not hard enough, Mia now discovers in the new book that her mother, who had never been married to Mia's father, is in fact pregnant with the child of Mia's algebra teacher, and that mom and the algebra teacher are getting married. So becoming a princess really pales in comparison to that kind of family upheaval.
Mm-hmm.
There are a variety of books that have appealed to kids in the last few years. Ian Lawrence has had books called The Wreckers, and I can't remember the second one now. And the third one in what turned into a trilogy, The Buccaneers, is now out. And that's full of lots of swashbuckling and a young man in the 18th century saving his father and many people from evildoers on the sea. William Slater is a name that may be familiar to some of you. He is actually a child of Urbana. He is a writer of much interesting science fiction for kids, and he has a book now called Marco's Millions, which is actually a sequel, but it's better than the book. It's a sequel, too. And Marco's younger sister, Lily, thinks that there's nasty things in her bedroom, and Lily's right.
Ooh.
Garth Nix wrote a book called Sabriel that a lot of people really loved, mm-hmm. and that was out several years ago. The sequel, Liriel, has come out now. I'm treading lightly when it comes to fantasy because Janice Del Negro, who's away for a few weeks, is actually the fantasy expert, but I can just pass on those that I know have been popular.
Sure.
If you enjoyed in a more reality-based book for older readers, Virginia Yuer-Wolf's Make Lemonade was a fantastic novel in free verse form that read like a young person talking to you. And the sequel, True Believer, is now out, where Levon discovers when an old friend from grade school returns that her feelings for Jody go beyond mere friendship. For younger readers, there's a new series out by Daniel Pinkwater, is often very popular, mm-hmm. which has a camp theme. I guess kind of in the way Holes has a camp theme. It's called Fat Camp Commandos.
I love his titles.
They're splendid.
He does great titles.
Yes, and he just really is, I think, in tune with what kids are interested in. Mm-hmm. And these are kids sent off to, I don't recall what the euphemism is, but it's a fat camp. They take arms and disappear and then fight back in the way that only Pinkwater kids can. There was something else that made me think of, and I'm not seeing it in my notes. other camp-inclined books. There's really camps and camping, just sort of summer adventure. There's a lovely picture book of a poetry sequence by Christine O'Connell George called Toasting Marshmallows. And it really captures some of the delicate physical details of camping out with the wood smoke and your family and getting stuck in your sleeping bag and how the family dog suddenly turns into a different creature when he's hearing all the wild things out there and how when you come back you can smell the wood smoke on your clothes. There's also Jonathan London's book, Whitewater, which is written with his young son, and it's from the son's point of view about, it's a picture book with some really lovely illustrations about some breathtaking canyon views. It's the account of a whitewater rafting trip that the father and son share. Mm-hmm. And the son is initially not at all sure about this. And then he finds himself growing more proficient and being the one to spot and hail the rapids ahead. And they really grow together as a father and son. And since we've had a father and son, as a devoted daughter to a father, I have always been dismayed that fathers and daughters seem to be a little underserved in the literature. Mm-hmm. And there's a splendid picture book out right now by Marilyn Singer called Dee Dee and Daddy on the Promenade. And that's a little girl and her father going out walking. And it is definitely a bouncy and enthusiastic young girl that dad has to go quite a bit to keep up with. But they're having a splendid time going out and seeing all the sights and meeting all the people. And that's really a lovely father-daughter book. I've gone all over the map and could go longer. I don't know. Do you want to bounce back
well,
and forth? I didn't get to. You know, okay, go on.
Well, it was interesting that the kids are coming in for the Lemony Snickets, which involves a family of orphans who go from one dastardly adventure to another. And orphans seem almost to be a theme in children's literature. So if you can't find the unfortunate series of events as quickly as you want, some other orphan books you might try for might be Aerith's Birthday by Avi. This is an unusual orphan book. It involves a porcupine who's having a very bad day. It couldn't be worse. No one remembers his birthday. He sets off to get some salt. He's craving salt. When he comes across a fox who has her foot caught in a trap, and she makes him promise that he will take care of her kits, her babies. And so this is a story of how a grumpy, out-of-sorts porcupine becomes the mother, even though he's a male porcupine, to the three kits. And it's a great story, Aerith's Birthday. Sort of a classic orphan adventure, The Wolves of Willoughby Chase, very Victorian. These two orphans are in such trouble, and I think it's the dastardly evil aunt who's trying to get the family fortune, and oh, it's dreadful. But it's great reading, The Wolves of Willoughby Chase by Joan Aiken. Another great orphan story is Bud Not Buddy. This is one that won the Newbery, and also it's one of the Rebecca Caudle candidates as well. Bud is another orphan, but he's an orphan with some sass, and he sets off to see his father and gets caught up in adventure as well. And Bud Not Buddy by Christopher Paul Curtis. And Christopher Paul Curtis wrote just an incredible book, The Watsons Go to Birmingham, 1963, which should have won the Newbery, but it didn't, and that is a crime. But if there's one children's book that you should read, even as an adult, it's The Watsons Go to Birmingham in 1963. It involves a black family who's traveling south with their troubled older son to have him spend the summer with his grandmother. You start out in this book, you laugh, you laugh, you laugh, you laugh. One of the funniest episodes is when the older son, being the fool that he is, puts his tongue on the icy mirror of the car. And the younger brother, they're supposed to be cleaning the ice off the car, and the younger brother's cleaning off the ice when he hears, and the younger brother says, I'm just going to keep going. You know, that's Kenny. He's just trying to get me in trouble. He looks, he sees his brother, he runs in the house. The mother comes out, you know, she's screaming, my baby. And she's going to yank her son off of the mirror, and he's like, the father comes out, and the father's going to yank him off, and it's a great, just great family scenes and lots of laughter. And then, of course, that changes on a dime because something powerful happened in 1963 in Birmingham, and it affects their lives, and it's a great book. Do read that one.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just take a moment to reintroduce you because we've been talking for a little bit, and For people who have joined us since the beginning, we should pass on that our guests are Janice Harrington, head of youth services at the Champaign Public Library, whose voice you just heard, and Deborah Stevenson, associate editor of the Bulletin of the Center for Children's Books. And we're talking about some great books for kids, whether it's this summer or just in general. And if you'd like to join the conversation, if you have thoughts of your own, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana, anywhere else, 800-222-9455. There. I did my job there.
Very good. Okay. Very good.
Well done.
Excellent, I thought.
Some of what Janice was mentioning, of course, sparks off the thoughts of some other books in my head. There was an extraordinary book that came out this year that won the Boston Globe Hornbook Award that really wasn't like anything we'd seen before. Mm-hmm. It's called Carver, A Life in Poems, and it's by Marilyn Nelson. George Washington Carver is a figure that many of us learn about in early youth, and we basically learn he did something interesting about the peanut, and he was at the Tuskegee Institute, and often we really never get beyond that. Marilyn Nelson, whose father was in fact a Tuskegee airman, and she is herself an English professor and poet, has this extraordinary sequence of poems that puts this man, this really extraordinary man, in context and really gives you the sense that he was, in his own way, essentially a Leonardo da Vinci in his in the depths of his genius.
Who's the author of that again? I'm sorry.
It's Marilyn Nelson.
Okay.
In that he decided that the best way for him to serve his people and to serve his faith was to go in something pragmatic like agricultural engineering, and that when he went down to Tuskegee, hampered by no money, no facilities, people with no budget, nothing to turn to, he turned around the indigenous crops to what was available, to what would grow in land with some serious troubles, and essentially gave his people economic possibilities that allowed
them to
survive.
It's a really surprising book. It gives you a whole new look at George Washington Carver. Like you say, somebody that we've, you know, you hear about from third grade all the way up and associate just with peanuts, but it makes you reexamine his life and makes him a heroic figure, and you get a deeper perception, understanding of the work that he did.
And the poems are lyrical, free verse. They're also very brief. They're really quite easy to read, though they're thoughtful, and that the vocabulary is occasionally sophisticated, but the thoughts are very clear. The pages are also interspersed with historical photographs of Carver, of the Tuskegee Institute, of other artifacts from that time.
Neat.
It's really elegant and fascinating little book.
Would appeal to adults as well as
yes,
middle school reader.
Yes, very much so. On a totally different note, because I'm free associating like mad with whatever Janice says, as long as we're talking about animals, I want to make a plug for a book that I adored this year. I was a girl who loved horses. I'm a grown-up who loved horses. We don't get the books we deserve so much these days, but we got one this spring, and it's by Jesse Haas, and it's called Runaway Radish. And this is a book about a pony that deserved to be immortalized in literature. He's just your basic rascally pony that a series of girls have a good time on and then outgrow. And they need to figure out what to do with Radish when he seems to be doomed to a life of always being outgrown by the girls that love him. Margot Apple, I still think they couldn't find an illustrator called Carrot, so they went with Apple, has some wonderful pictures of this almost but not quite anthropomorphized pony who's just sort of grinning out at the reader. And another nice thing about this book is that it really is suitable for younger readers than a lot of books are these days, because often kids who are really just comfortable with books kind of either have to leap up to fourth and fifth grade level or kind of spin their wheels for a bit. And this really can go down to about second grade level for readers.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you mentioned animals, because I just learned about this ASPCA, Henry Berg Children's Book Award for good animal books. It's put out by the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. So we have a list of the top animal books, at least voted by this organization. Mm-hmm. You can call the library or stop by, and we'll have a display of those books for you to look at. It's interesting the variety of interest and curiosities that children bring to reading or just to life itself. Also hot this summer at the library has been ancient Egypt. And if you're looking for a good history, you might check out the series I Was There. It's called I Was There Books. The one that I have in my hand is Secrets of the Mummies. And if you want to know how they created mummies, this book will tell you.
Wow.
And you'll probably be convinced that you never want to be one. it's pretty graphic, but just great pictures, great history, and again, just a feel that curiosity, that insatiable curiosity that kids have. Magic School Bus, I meant not Magic School Bus, the Magic Treehouse books. The fans of Magic Treehouse want to make sure that they're at the library next Tuesday would be July 17th
right.
at 2 o'clock because there will be a Magic Treehouse party for the Magic Treehouse fans. Yeah, and you'll want to celebrate that 2 o'clock.
I was thinking of ants.
Ants?
You were talking about ants. A-U-N-T, ants.
Ants. Okay.
Ants.
Okay.
It's not uncles.
Bugs?
Because you had the Joan Aiken with the ants.
That's right.
There is an author who is writing some really lovely fantasy with cheer and good humor and robustness for late middle graders, and that's Eva Ibbotson. Mm-hmm. And her new book this spring is called The Island of the Ants. And there's a collection of ants out on an island, as the title has probably let you know. And their job is to take care of the animals that wash up on the shore of this island. Animals that range from, I think, your basic seabirds and whatnot, but also the odd kraken, the mermaid, the things of that sort that wash up on islands. And unfortunately, the ants are growing a little older, and they really need some apprentices so that someone will take their place when they go. So they decide they need to kidnap some. And this is what happens when they do.
Pretty cool.
Right. That's the only ant book that comes to my mind. However, darker edged and really kind of sinuous fantasy that intrigued me this spring was Celia Reese's Witch Child.
Mm.
And that's the story of a young woman who travels to Salem Village with the historical colonists. And there is much concern among the people traveling to Salem Village, as you will not be surprised to hear, about witchcraft. Now, what's interesting about her is that she is a witch, but witchcraft doesn't mean what the people of Salem mm-hmm. think. So that there's this interesting tension in that they are afraid of something, and she knows who's causing what they're actually afraid of, and she knows it's not her.
Mm-hmm.
But she can't, of course, reveal this
right.
fact, or she will be revealed.
Yeah.
Mm.
Wow.
That's a fun one.
Well, let me just, again, do the host thing. We're a little past our midpoint here, and we're talking about children's books and summer reading, and our guests are Janice Harrington, head of the youth services at the Champaign Public Library, and Deborah Stevenson, associate editor of the Bulletin of the Center for Children's Books, and we're talking about some great books that they've encountered recently. If you have some suggestions, we'd love to hear those as well. The number around Champaign-Urbana, again, 333-9455. And toll-free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. I'm curious what you think about, a lot of the books that kids are interested in. Do you think that, do you always like the books? Or are there some that you think are just...
Absolutely not. I don't even like all the books that my husband reads. So,
yeah.
No, I mean, reading taste, that's what's great about it.
Yeah.
It's individual. It's person by person. But there's one reading taste I do want to make sure we touch on
sure.
this morning, because there's always some caller who calls in who's very upset about this. So I want to address that, which is if you are someone who loves the great classics, let's not forget the two that you can send kids in to get, still very popular, Jane Eyre, the another orphan in trouble who gets sent to the dastardly, horrible girls' school and then goes off and meets, Mr.
Rochester.
Rochester, yes, and his secret up in the attic. And, of course, if you are a fan of dog stories, then the dog story of all dog stories would have to be Jack London's Call of the Wild.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely come in for that. I still would say never, ever let a child read Last of the Mohicans, but that's just a personal opinion.
I think Mark Twain agreed with you on that, actually.
Right.
And then, of course, I think that some shorter Dickens, especially the stories,
right,
I think
right.
some of the Lemony Snicket readers
right.
Could easily move on to.
Correct, correct. So we are fans of classics. We recommend them at every opportunity.
Yeah. Well, there certainly are a whole bunch of classic kids' books. I'm thinking of the younger kids that mm-hmm. seems like every kid knows.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's
It's nice too, though, is
Morris Sendak or whatever.
They're mm-hmm. coming out with a lot of new editions of some of the great classics.
Mm-hmm.
So Trumpet of the Swans came out with a new edition, and it's beautiful.
Right.
The little swan who's born without a voice, and his father, in a desperate effort to help his child, breaks into a music store and steals a horn. Well, doesn't really steal it, but he gets the horn, he gives it to his son, and then you have this poor swan who now has to do something to rescue the family honor, because his dad is a thief after all, and so he sets out with his horn to raise money, becomes a jazz musician, I believe, but it's a great story, and it's out again.
Yeah, I mean, there are always these beautifully illustrated classics that are huge and bound and suitable for grandparents to buy, mm-hmm. which I think children are happy to get. But some of the ones that Janice is referring to are the ones that are really produced for the kids to be interested in. So there is a lot of bringing back of some books that have really been enjoyed, which is nice.
Speaking of grandparents, I think one of the loveliest gifts that you can give a child is we have so many grandparents who come in with their grandchildren to share books that they had when they were a child. So we have, this summer, I've had a lot of requests for Trixie Belden. You know, grandmother's there and she wants to share those books, or the fans of Nancy Drew. So come in. If you're a grandchild, a grandfather, grandmother, bring your child in and make one of those visits. We'd love to see you. And we want to know what books you read when you were a kid. I'm sure we still have those. Mm-hmm.
Which actually, in fact, makes me think of a picture book from this past year that I really liked. It is a retrospective. It is after the grandmother's life is over. But it is a very tender story called The Hickory Chair by Lisa Rowe Fraustino. And it's the story of Lewis, a young boy who adored his grandmother. Lewis is blind, and he enjoys a particular relationship with her. After she dies, she proves to have left notes for all her grandchildren throughout all the house, with some indication of their special relationship. And Lewis is sad that he can't seem to find his, but he grows up and realizes that really the relationship was about more than a note. But then later on, when he is older, he does in fact find his note from his grandmother.
Oh, that's lovely.
It's a really delicately written book with some very interesting illustrations. I like that one a lot.
Wow. It always amazes me to see how much kids learn from just reading these books or being read to. You know, I have young kids, they're 4 and 6, but they have picked up so many lessons just from getting the viewpoint of the characters telling the stories, or, you know, what happens to these people and as a result of something they do and so forth.
Well, you know, the research is out there telling us over and over, the most powerful thing you can do in terms of making your child a reader, in terms of giving them that head start in school, is to read to them, especially when they're infants. Talk. Do that dialogue. Increase those vocabularies. We have, they've shown that children who read poorly at the end of first grade are the kids who still read poorly at the end of 12th grade. So we've got this really narrow window from infancy to first grade to grab these kids, to teach them how to read, to get them excited about it. So how do you get them excited? You share the books that you enjoyed. Read to them every night. Talk to them about books. Bring them to the library. Make a celebration of getting a library card. Let them see you reading. I mean, it's not just talk the talk, do the walk. Read, let them see you reading, whether it's a newspaper or whatever. When you're going through the world, that we live in a print society. So, you know, let them know that those squiggles that they see on the signs, that all those things have meaning. Enjoy books. Be a book lover. Take them to bookstores. Just celebrate this great, wonderful heritage that we have.
Absolutely. I mean, our office just moved. And when I say our office, I mean our office and our collection is also in the process of moving. So the nice movers had to pack up all our books, which is no mean feat. And they were enjoying themselves immensely. And we were, of course, tickled pink to hear them talking about how, oh, yes, their kids have been going to the library since they were little and they all have library cards. And they were looking at books. And I think they might have been jotting down some to go look for their own kids. And that was really thrilling because we are essentially an academic unit where we are. And we don't get that much direct relationship with kids and with people who deal with kids in the way that Janice Harrington does. So
I bet you have a great collection of books.
We do have a great collection of books. It's useful as a research collection.
Yeah.
That's how it functions.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't circulate, and it's not for kids. It's easily equaled by the great collection of books at the Champaign Public Library in Urbana Free, and you can circulate those.
We often call the center when we get people who call us up and say, there was a book I remember when I was a little girl. It had a blue cover, and there was a dog in it. Can you help me find it? Then I will call the Center for the Study of Children's Books, and sometimes they know.
Yeah. And they'll ask, what kind of dog was it?
No. Right.
We have a caller to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation, and we'll welcome others. We have just about 15 minutes left with our guests, Janice Harrington, head of the Youth Services at the Champaign Public Library, and Deborah Stevenson, associate editor of the Bulletin of the Center for Children's Books, and that's what we're talking about. 333-WILL is the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll-free anywhere else, 800-222-WILL. We have a listener in southeastern Illinois on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, you were talking about older books, and I was just wondering if the Dr. Doolittle books are still popular.
Dr. Doolittle is still popular. People still come in for Dr. Doodle. Actually, that's a controversial book, believe it or not, which might surprise you. It has run onto some rough ground because of its depiction of other races, other cultures. And I believe that they have come out with editions that sort of address that issue. And I think that
bolderizing Dr. Doolittle.
Oh, you won't believe what's going on in the world of children's literature. So I think you want to be aware of that before you necessarily put that book into a child's hand and make that sort of a conscious choice. If you get the older ones, you're probably getting the one that has the presentations that contemporary readers question, and that there are newer.
What races are
I believe the Good Doctor travels to Africa, and there are some depictions
I didn't read the one where he went to Africa. Mm-hmm. He was at home in England when ones that I read.
But, you know, this issue touches a lot of children's books, frankly. I mean, the Little House books, Little House on the Prairie, has run into to problems. If you look at the Caldecott winner of the depiction of Abraham Lincoln by the Dallaires, the drawings in that, if you look at the depictions of African Americans, we look at them today and we say that these are derogatory, and they are. But so a book, the wonderful thing about a book is it gives you a space, a time to think, to question, to appreciate, and you don't put a book into anybody's hand, or at least a child's hand, without really thinking about what they're going to find between those covers.
Well, I mean, you know, Huck Finn is that, but I know the movies, and as I recall, Dr. Doolittle, the movies have never gotten him right. I mean, they had first the super sophisticated Rex Harrison, and then the steel trap mind and witty tongue of Eddie Murphy, and he was a simple, very simple man. In fact, the cat's meat man was always saving him from being taken by somebody, by Sharpies who were always trying to take him, as I recall it.
And, of course, there's that whole world of movies made from books that both frustrates and delights people because they're, especially these days, so often. I mean, look at Shrek, which is out now, which is a movie in many ways very different from its book.
Let's not talk about Shrek. There are lots of people who want to march on Walt Disney and burn it to the ground for what they've done to children's classic fairy tales. So, yeah.
You were talking about somebody calling up. Is somebody there that is from the center that you said you could call up with a blue book with a dog in it? I mean.
You should call Deborah Stevenson if you have that. If you have that. If you have that.
Stop
question.
Hitting each other.
Maybe you had that information. You're not one of the experts in that line.
Sometimes
she's more of an expert than she owns up.
You know, it's very interesting. The library, I think, does a surprising job of actually being able to help people. But you need to give us enough clues.
Well, I can explain. I'm just always wondered what this was and how it was. It was a blind man who. Had a small boy. I don't know what the relationship was. I think perhaps he was his uncle or somebody, grandfather maybe.
Yeah.
And he had a seeing eye dog, and it was a series of mysteries that.
Okay. Do you remember even one word? Okay. We won't talk about this now on the air because it could take up a long time. But let me tell you what you're going to do. If you want to track down that book, you're going to call your local library. If you can remember even one word out of the title, they can use things like the internet. They can call other libraries and they can try to track that down for you. So one word of the title, enough of the plot. Sometimes, so you said a blind man, so they could look under blindness fiction, physical handicaps. They could look under dogs fiction, but dogs fiction is a huge area. So you've got to give them enough to work with. And you, with the internet, you can be surprised. But give your library a call.
I just thought perhaps they're off the top of your head, but that's okay.
It's always worth a query. Sometimes we work miracles and surprise ourselves.
No, that one, I'm sorry, that one I don't recognize.
Did you really answer the question as to whether Dr. Doolittle is popular now?
No, not really. No, I take that back. Dr. Doolittle still has fans. We still have requests for that. But I would say, comparatively, is he Harry Potter? No. Is he Magic Treehouse? No. But definitely there are people who have bonded with that book and they come to the library. So it's, I'd put it in the category of an ongoing favorite. And,
you know, I got that Harry Potter, the original, I think it was the first Harry Potter thing on talking books. I have macular degeneration and don't read now. I thought, and I was trying to decide whether what my reaction would have been to it as a young person.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think it was that good a book, actually.
Well, you know, there's some people that agree with you. I think Deborah Stevenson has said that it's not her favorite fantasy.
That's true.
I think the powerful fantasies of the least last 50 years, the Lord of the Rings trilogy by Tolkien has to go to the top of the list. Just come out for kids, the series by Pullman, which is The Golden Compass, The Subtle Knife, The Amber Spyglass, an incredibly rich, complex, staggering, you can't believe these issues are in a children's book. And kids who are strong readers, they're really going to love that fantasy series. But it's supposed to be the best since Lord of the Rings.
I like to see what's happening, and I also recently listened to audited recording of what's her name, Judy Blume?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Summer Sisters. Do you know how typical that is of her books?
Can't remember what's actually in Summer Sisters, and I'm wondering if that's one of her adult titles. Do you know?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
It's about two young girls that become fast friends, and the one is fairly poor, and the other one is rich, and she spends the summer on the sort of resort on this island area. With this older girl, and I mean not an older girl, but with this richer girl, and they become fast friends, and they make arrangements for her to get into a better college than she could have gotten into otherwise. And it takes them through well into adult life.
It could be then that it was an adult book if it takes them into adult life, but Judy Blume's books for older readers, she writes for a wide variety of ages, such as Here's to You, Mrs. Robinson. Here's to You, Rachel Robinson. Obviously, take off on Mrs. Robinson, and I get them mixed up. Deal with some of those same issues, and she's always very keenly interested in some of the problems of young people and the problems of the society, whether it be race or financial differences or other cultural differences. So in some senses, it sounds like it's dealing with some issues typical for Judy Blume, even if it is, in fact, written for older readers than some of the books we'd be talking about. But again, it may just be one that I'm not remembering off the top of my head that was written for young people.
I'm kind of curious what you think about the impact of Hollywood. We're talking about some mm-hmm. of the movies, and you were saying, you know, a lot of people are upset with Disney because of what they do with these stories. And I certainly can appreciate that point of view. At the same time, I spoke with one author whose book is being made into a movie, and of course, you know, a movie can't contain everything a book can. Mm-hmm. A book mm-hmm. is much longer in terms of the actual text. So, I mean, as their inherent, you know, differences in the two approaches to storytelling. But
well, on one hand, you know, you're very excited and pleased with the fact that television, the media, Hollywood, they get children very excited about books.
Yeah.
You know, they saw it at the cinema. They come to the library. They want to read the book. So that's definitely there, and that's definitely something to be very thankful for. As a librarian, it's when they, you know, they take a wonderful traditional story and they butcher it or dummy it down or add talking animals.
Yeah, right.
that you get upset. So I think it's an issue that just sort of sets my librarian's teeth on edge.
Well, and I think we've had so many bad experiences mm-hmm. with movies that we tend to be very wary and very protective. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think it can be useful to remember books that, when made into movies, maybe did change from the book, but were in themselves pretty wonderful experiences. I think of something like The Black Stallion, obviously, because I'm a horse book person, and I'm also a serious purist. I don't like changes from a book, but that really is an elegant, beautiful, and lyrical movie. Going back a bit farther, To Kill a Mockingbird is one of my favorite adaptations of any book on film. So sometimes if you let yourself see a movie as a new thing rather than intending
right.
to be just a depiction right, of the right. book, it can be a good experience in its own right.
And what I find myself doing too, Babe the Gallant Pig, which was a wonderful movie, mm-hmm. but children won't read the book. I show them the book, I saw the movie. So it gives me an opportunity to say, well, you know, He's also written another book about a pig called Pigs Might Fly, a little pig who's also on the verge of being turned into bacon when he escapes and gets back to the barn, only to overhear a conversation between his mother, the sow, and the other sows. And his mother's saying what a precious pig he is and how he'll be back shortly, and the other sows are saying, huh, and pigs might fly. He hears pigs might fly, and this pig thinks that they think that when he grows up, he'll be able to fly. So he goes off to take flying lessons from a duck. So I can go from, you know, the movie that they don't want to read the book, mm-hmm. to this other opportunity. So on that scale, thank you, Hollywood.
Yeah, that's a neat thing. Yeah.
And I suspect with maybe like Phyllis Reynolds, Naylor and Shiloh, that
a lot of the people
who've had books adapted for the screen are people who really have produced quite a few fine books, mm-hmm. Which is nice in that it really does give you some place to move to. Right.
So it does, you know, it does bring kids to the library. They want something else like that, or they liked it so much they want to find something else by that author. So it's love hate.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, then you have things like, Clifford the Big Red Dog, mm-hmm. which is now a TV show, mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, does that affect what kids are interested? I guess they've always been interested in Clifford.
Well, sometimes I think television produces its own category of literature.
Yeah.
I mean, the Franklin fans, the Barney the Purple Stinking Dinosaur books.
That's not his official name.
No. Right. And Thomas the Tank. Oh, the preschoolers love the Thomas the Tank Engine books. Yeah. They're always coming in for that. You know, they can hardly pronounce the word T. You know, Thomas the Tank. You know, so, you know, it's great. Anything that gets kids excited about books, mm-hmm. I'm totally for, so it's fine.
And there is kind of an interesting interrelationship going on these days with especially illustrators and television, in that every now and then I'll run into, well, it's not even every now and then, oh, look, there's this artist I like, Dan Yaccarino. Oh, well, he's developing a cartoon with Nickelodeon. And here's somebody else, oh, and he's developing a cartoon with Nickelodeon. So they tend to feed back and forth. So then somebody who's been doing books is now doing books that are based on the cartoons. And there's a sort of circular thing going on. And sometimes I get a book in and then only find out later that it was television related, like the McInpin Kipper books, because mm-hmm. I'd known him. You know, really personally, I'd known him before he was doing anything animated, and therefore it didn't occur to me to think that these might be television related.
To make a point that we've already made, but you cannot make it too often, mm-hmm. it's interesting too that studies have shown that the vocabulary level of your average television show is at a lower level than a child's picture book. Mm-hmm. So you're going to expose your child to richer language, richer vocabulary, turn them into readers with the books, not with the television show, and that point has to be made.
Yeah, and it amazes me that, you know, kids understand a lot more than we give them credit for.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And Beatrix Potter, since we were talking about classics, is one of the classic examples, in that she really does use an extraordinary range of vocabulary in such a precise and brilliant way that it adds to the richness of the book, that even if the kids do not understand the actual words, I'm persuaded that the knots would have proven indigestible. Mm-hmm. That sort of grandiloquence is just adding flavor to the story, and it doesn't matter that indigestible is not necessarily a word in their vocabulary. It stretches the edges of it nonetheless. Right.
Well, I'm sorry to say that we're here at the end of the time, and I'm sure we could keep talking. There are a lot more books we could describe and so forth, but we'll have to save that for another day. Our guests have been Janice Harrington, head of youth services at the Champaign Public Library, and Deborah Stevenson, associate editor of the Bulletin of the Center for Children's Books. And, of course, there's lots going on at the Champaign Public Library and the Urbana Free Library. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Douglas Branch there. And also the Bookmobile. All those library locations.
Very good. And libraries everywhere, mm-hmm. near you. Mm-hmm. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.